America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Hey everybody, what's going on? It's Josh Wigler here, and it's time to wrap up yet another week in Succession. It is the anti-penultimate week of Succession, and we are saying goodbye to it not a moment too soon. I am joined here, as always, by Jess Sterling. Jess, how you doing?
I'm good. This time I actually did bring a lemon seltzer to the podcast.
Okay. Well, is it a LaCroix or no?
No, I don't do LaCroix. I'm a Polar girl.
Yes. We love a Polar seltzer here in the Wiggler Fox household, as evidenced by the yes that came immediately.
Worcester, represent.
From our special guest here on the Week in Review Succession podcast, the co-founder of the Succession podcast here on Post Show Recaps, as I always like to remind people. And probably the person who is most at risk to get wasabi in their eye at work of all of the people who we have on the podcast. It is professional chef and my wife, the great Emily Fox. Emily.
Hi. I can't say that I've worked with wasabi anytime soon.
Sure, but you
are. Horseradish today, though.
I do feel like you're the, again, the most at risk.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
You're handling spicy things all the time.
Spicy takes, spicy foods.
Yeah.
You name it, I've got it.
That's right. Well, we've got spicy takes for you today, folks, as we are wrapping up our conversation on America Decides, the 8th episode of Succession's final season. This is the final podcast that we're going to be doing on America Decides. It is, of course, just one of many that we did this week. We had the live recap on YouTube on Sunday night. Here we are on YouTube again. Hey, YouTube, what's up? PostShowRecaps.com/YouTube. If you want to subscribe to the channel, you could also just watch us on VOD if you want to watch us after the fact. Then we had the deep dive was what came next. I got together with LaTanya on Versus, comparing the 2 weeks' episodes of Succession and Yellow Jackets. Rob and I really got into it. Rob Sesternino back on Armageddon Time Watch. He once again believes Succession is barreling towards the apocalypse. And honestly, same girl. The shape of the apocalypse is maybe in some level of dispute, but this definitely felt apocalyptic. Here we are wrapping things up with our final chat about America Decides before we get to Sunday night's penultimate episode of Succession. So, Emily, how are you feeling? This is a tough one. This is a hard one to watch. You and I watched it together. You were like, well, that wasn't fun.
Yeah, I think this episode inevitably makes you feel so many levels of dread. It really reveals what we already know about each individual character, but it synthesizes it really well, that everyone's terrible. They're all just power hungry. I mean, the same themes over and over again, but it really just hits the nail on the head with watching them basically try to control election results. So yeah, nice little memories of how things actually went in the U.S. back in 2016. Mm-hmm.
Where were we on election night 2016?
I was drunk on red wine and very upset towards the end of the night.
Yeah.
And then
I think I was exhibiting some special behavior as well with a neighbor. It was like a very strange team up, but it was like, okay, this is the moment. This is the moment that this team up needs to occur if ever it's to occur.
Yeah. And, I think seeing the inner workings of what a network that's as influential as this one is, both in real life and in TV.
Yeah.
Not a great feeling.
It'd be great if Post Show Recaps as a network somehow attained such power. Can you imagine the things we would do to the world if we were in such an influential position as to
things?
We can change political outcomes. Oh my God.
There would just be like more Mario games.
Yeah. The casino would be legal. The casino. We would weaponize Wario. We would make him, we would send him out worldwide, let alone nationwide.
You have more control over GIFs.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of it.
it would be illegal to say anything bad about Lost. You would be thrown you'd be thrown into the gulag. You would not be allowed to say a single negative word, even about the ending. Even especially about the ending.
Would you just have like a frozen donkey wheel that you would make people push if they said anything bad? That's their punishment.
Yes, and that powers the servers that keep post-show recaps online, which ends up being like a real flaw in the design after all of the power has gone to my head, and eventually the workers get smart enough to realize, well, we just won't push the wheel, and that'll be the end of post-show recap. That's sort of the climactic
existence here.
obviously I'm taking this episode well, Jess.
I've seen the episode now, gosh, I think 3 times. That was as much as I could stomach it. It's really hard when it's a really good episode in terms of what the messaging is and what the characters are doing. Obviously the writing, the directing, all of those things are also excellently done, but that doesn't make it any easier to watch. Having lived through some of this stuff not even that long ago, and possibly we'll be living through something like this again in the near future, it's such a tough episode to want to revisit more and more. But that being said, it's still really well done. And I do think, as much as I'm not a big fan of the political stuff, I've never made that a secret, I don't really care for it as much as I care for a lot of the other storylines on Succession. This does feel, to your point, Josh, like this is what Succession is. It's what it's always been. And we're fooling ourselves if we think that any of these people are good people. They're not. Like, they're relatable at times. Like, they have issues like all of us do. But they're all just so bad. They're all terrible. And so episodes like these are really difficult to take in and consume when there are other episodes where you do empathize and sympathize with the characters. So it's kind of really difficult to then have an episode like this where you're like, oh man, come on, everyone.
Oh man. Yeah, that was my reaction too when the episode ended. A hearty Grace Leader-esque, oh man, was how I reacted on Sunday night. To bring Lost back into the conversation, because why not? And of course, we are live here on YouTube. So if you're joining us, you can get some feedback in as we're going. The Fisher Protocol writing in and saying, I said before, but as far as audience reaction, this is definitely the Across the Sea of Succession, which, Emily, if you don't remember which one Across the Sea is, that's the one where they're like, Jacob and the Man in Black were just kids once upon a time, and there is a secret golden waterfall, and everything's going to build up to that. And some people really, really did not respond well to that. I think a critical difference between these episodes, as Irene points out, the fact that it was so realistic and well done made it worse, made the episode worse. I don't think the fact that it was so realistic and well done made Across the Sea worse. I don't think that was Across the Sea's issue, and it is currently not illegal to badmouth that episode of Lost. I do think that still feeling the resonance of this episode all these days later afterwards, I'm transported back to election night. I'm transported back to the day after election night. And do you remember you and I went on a long walk?
We walked to the donut plant in Prospect Heights.
Yeah, we were like, we need donuts.
Yeah, we bought like a dozen donuts and then, no, 2 dozen, I think.
Yeah, because
and
we were,
then
like,
we came back and
people.
Like kept giving them to people.
Yeah, yeah. But
I brought an entire thing of donuts to like an acupuncture appointment that I had that I like, you know, had scheduled for like a couple of weeks, and I just showed up and was like, "Here you guys go," and everyone was like, "How you doing?" You know, I think we all there were a lot of us that had a collective look in our eyes of like, "Oh my God, this happened, and what does this mean for us?" And there were just it was silent. There was so much silence, you know what I mean? And especially in New York, where everything's loud all of the time, like even in the middle of the night, there are people screaming, there are things happening, there's a lot of activity. It felt like almost The Walking Dead in a way, less snarling and making weird noises, but like, you know what I mean?
We were just kind of the pall.
Yeah. And you know, it was just a very bleak time.
Yeah. Well, bleak times here in the Succession end times, but we're going to have fun here on the podcast as we're we're already having fun, are we not?
Yeah, I know. It's
Emily,
just
this isn't mandatory.
Topic.
You can leave at any time if you need to. Okay.
No, I am here. I am ready.
Okay, great. Yes. But we're going to have fun rating the Roys, I do believe. I think
What are we saying about everybody? Because honestly, zeros across the board.
Probably, yeah, but we'll still get a chance to talk about everybody. That'll be fun at least. And of course, we've also got headlines that we are going to get into, articles that were posted throughout the week discussing Succession. And yeah, I think that that's probably where we should start. As I've been saying for the past few weeks, I'm not going to not mention the writer strike that is ongoing still here in the U.S. with the WGA is striking back. I will keep it brief this time around because we are actually about to post a writer's strike centric podcast here on Post Show Recaps. The great Amanda Rabinowitz and I are going to be speaking with a member of the WGA and having a conversation about what's at stake for the writers and everything. So that podcast is actually recording about 3 hours from right now. So look forward to that. I'm really excited about having that conversation and finally having a dedicated WGA conversation here on the podcast. So look for that in the main Post Show Recaps feed. We'll also post it in the patron feeds and PSR Plus if you are a patron of Post Show Recaps. So yeah, if you've got questions about the writer strike, I hope you're listening to this live. If you have those questions, you can send them in the next 2 or 3 hours. But otherwise, hopefully we answered your questions during the writer strike podcast that is imminently recording. Beyond that, let's focus on Succession. Jess, you have rounded up a bunch of stories from this past week. Where do you want to start?
I want to start with Jesse Armstrong because he's guested on the official HBO podcast for Succession. And I thought he had this one tidbit I pulled out of his interview that I thought was absolutely fascinating. Of course, he is one of the main creators, the writers, like he is the bleeding soul, the heart and soul of Succession. In a lot of ways. And when the interviewer asked him why Tom, in the conversation between Tom and Shiv, where she reveals that she's pregnant with his baby, why Tom asked Shiv if the baby is his response was, I think it's a mixture of playing for time and an FU to somebody who has withheld this news and deployed it on the most busy night of his life. But I'm open to suggestions.
Jesse Armstrong said, but I'm open to suggestions.
He did, because the interviewer then said, well, I think he really doesn't necessarily believe Shiv that it could be a tactic. And he's like, oh, that's interesting. Maybe. And I just thought that was so fascinating because I mean, we talked a bit about it the first night where we watched the episode. And I never really took it as a play by Tom to say that. I took it as like, oh, he actually is like wondering if she's lying about this. But that's not how Jesse Armstrong took it. And I don't know, Emily, I'm curious to get your thoughts on this because we haven't heard what your thought is on Tom saying what he said to Shiv when she reveals she's pregnant.
Well, I think at this point, they're just so cruel to each other because it's just the dynamic they're in now, right? So him throwing that back at her is a deep, deep cut. And I think he is so unbelievably hurt by her. And even though he has teeth in the game and he's sort of clawing his way back and hitting her here and there and also trying to maintain whatever status he possibly can in this moment. I mean, the power playing for him specifically, he has a lot to lose. It might just be a real twist of the knife of like, F you, that's right. Like, how can I believe anything you're saying anymore at this mm-hmm. point? You've lied to me in so many ways, shapes, and forms. Like, and she has been acting like she's not pregnant this entire season, right? Like, yeah. She's throwing back drinks when there are like things to be celebrated. She's hanging out with Madsen and kind of flirting here and there. Like, there's a lot going on that would never, ever allude to her actually, you know, feeling like, you know, kind of giving off the classic signs of being pregnant.
Yeah.
So for her to kind of throw that out at him, especially, I forget what episode it was, maybe 2 episodes before, where he was like, and you won't even have my baby, blah, blah, blah. And mm-hmm. like, she didn't take that as the signal of like, maybe I should tell him. She was really weaponizing this in a specific way to throw at him at this particular moment. I think he's just like, oh, cool. You're really coming for me. Let me just throw this right back at you in a way that's particularly harming.
Yeah, I think also worth remembering that he's like coked out of his mind.
Yeah.
In the hallway scene. Mm-hmm, and so like mm-hmm. perhaps, you know.
He's Tom like not going to play nice now.
Well, maybe like I think inhibitions to the wind. And Tom is probably not somebody who makes the most level-headed decisions when he's right. the most level-headed anyway.
Well, he's so also, we know he's been sleeping very poorly. Not to point it out, everyone in the world has pointed out, it's like every episode is a day. And so we know he hasn't slept well for like at least 2 nights, if not 3 nights. So he's both really like low
on sleep.
How many
years has this show spanned? I feel like he hasn't slept that well for however many years the show has.
It's like 24 for Tom.
Yeah. Like, yes, he is like the Jack Bauer of Succession.
Yeah, like, you don't like me when I haven't had enough sleep, right? Like, there are a lot of people in the world who like get really cranky. And I think Tom is probably one of them. And then also like the coke not helping and the stress not helping. And just like the fact that he is not only dealing with like the most high stress moment of his entire career, but that his possibly to be ex-wife confusion issues is his boss, as well as his brothers-in-law who aren't super pleased with him at the moment. So like there's so much here that of course is not the, like the best time for Shiv to tell him. And she does anyway, because of course she does. She's a little messy.
A little messy.
She's so messy.
Just a little messy. They're all a little messy.
Yeah.
A little messy. Another article from this week that I really enjoyed reading was in The Atlantic. And the headline is, I was a pundit on Succession by Tom Nichols, who is an actual political analyst, a real reporter. And it is sort of the inside account of the making of this episode, which did involve enlisting actual journalists to play the roles of the journalists that you're seeing as the talking heads and the TVs in the background. And I felt very foolish, Jess, that I had to read this article to really understand the gravity of the effort of creating this episode. Basically like, oh, wow, yeah, they like had to film full election night coverage.
Everything
in order to make this.
Every detail has to be spot on, even the talking heads in the background. Like, this guy says that even all the paperwork on set all has the ATN logo, like, just in case any of it appears on screen. And it makes so much sense. Like, it's so... I guess we don't really think about this stuff, right? Like, because we're at the very complete opposite end where we're seeing the finished result. But I loved him talking about, yeah, they hired actual reporters, certain, not all of them, obviously, like Ravenhead, people like those are actors.
Which
but...
In the article, Zach Robidas, who plays Ravenhead, the article goes, I feel compelled to tell you that Zach is a hell of a nice guy and nothing like Ravenhead. very funny. Yeah.
But I love how it makes sense that they would hire reporters, because they know they actually do that job. So they know how to say what they're supposed to be saying. And it's probably less time teaching them about that than you would an actor, right? You're not spending as much time to teach the actor how to speak in that role.
They spend a lot of time talking with teleprompter cues without like talking to the teleprompter, which you're not supposed to do. That's amateur hour, apparently. So a really fun read. This I did not get a chance to read, this Vulture article that's next on the docket, Jess.
Yeah, the one with Eric Schultz, who is a political consultant, and he was previously deputy press secretary in the Obama White House. He gives a lot of in-depth information in terms of the real-life counterparts to this happening. Obviously, we talked a little bit earlier, like the 2016 stuff and potentially the future stuff. And it's really interesting that the way he phrases it in this interview, where he says, I think the show has a lot of power because it's set against a backdrop that's entirely credible. We spent a lot of time on the timeline of the evening as states report in what their electoral college votes were. It was all like super researched. And then, of course, there's the whole fire. And they talk about how it draws from like Fox News, which called Arizona for Joe Biden. None of the other networks had done that. And so they were out there by themselves, but they weren't really willing to then they have to call that Joe Biden had won after a certain. So it's really interesting looking at like the actual, because I mean, I'm not, to all of you out there, I am not a super well-known, I don't know a lot about politics. Like, I struggle. It's really hard. I don't know a ton about it.
Yeah.
So this interview is really, if you are someone like me, you don't know all the ins and outs of everything, really recommend this article, because he goes in depth into some of the stuff.
Interesting. Yeah, I think that the way in which the authenticity of this episode exudes through the screen, you can tell based on a lot of these different interviews. And I'm just skimming through this right now. Like, gosh, there's a lot of depth and a lot of precedent that's being used to build out the fictional version of Succession's election. I'm getting angry again.
Of course you are. It's like maddening. And one of the things that I thought was really funny is because they basically swapped it, right? So Fox called Arizona for Joe Biden, who obviously like they don't want to win.
Right.
And so it's a little bit different than this situation. But in real life, the person who made the decision on Fox News to call Arizona for Biden ended up getting fired, which I think is kind of interesting when you look at a character like possibly like a Tom, who is getting all the heat for this call at the end of the episode, right? Like Greg says, there are a lot of people on the phone that are like actually really angry with
him. Yeah, his phone's red hot. Uh-huh. On the podcast with Rob this week, Emily, Rob and I came to this sort of, I don't know if you would call it a eureka, but certainly we landed at this place where we feel like Cousin Greg's final form, in order to achieve it, has to involve him firing Tom. What do you think about that?
Ooh, I love that. I love
that. The student becomes the master.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a passing of like the, I don't know, the guard, whatever.
Of like the disgusting torch?
Yeah, passing of the disgusting torch. The disgusting brothers are no longer together as one.
Well,
yeah,
this is
I love
show
that.
About like all of like the family relationships ultimately falling apart and the toxicity of all of it. And like if we're looking at the siblings, Jess, as like they're not going to be able to keep it together. Certainly they're hugely fractured by the end of this episode. Then if they're not actually brothers, but if they have not become sibling like Tom and Greg, there has to be a fissure there. Ultimately,
it's possible. I think that's a little too far for me personally. Like, I don't think that's going to happen. I do think Greg is going to end up like very well positioned by the end of the show. I think that is for sure. He has been making heat. Like I've said before, he is the cockroach. He is the Diet Jerry. He is the like more objectionable
Diet Jerry.
Jerry is queen, right? Jerry is the best. Jerry has climbed the mountaintops and is sitting on her throne on the mountaintops, ready to
sue
everyone.
Could have brought you with me.
Wow.
Could have taken you, Roman.
I want to watch that spinoff.
Yeah.
I think Greg is so well positioned and it's blood. Right? Like he's family in a way that Tom is dispensable. Like Tom married in, but we can easily clean our hands of Tom.
Yeah.
And, and Greg is the perfect person to do.
And Greg is currently aligned with Kendall and Roman.
Chef's kiss.
Right? Like he's the one who snitched on Shiv, and he gives her the eyebrows. He gives her the eyebrows in that scene. I watched that little moment at least 5 times because I was like, I need to see exactly what he does when he's walking by those the window doors. He just does a little eyebrow waggle.
Little eyebrow waggle. We love an eyebrow waggle. Do you know who really, I don't know if he loved an eyebrow waggle, but he had to perform eyebrow waggles, was Darwin, played by Adam Godley. He had eyebrow waggle so he could get that wasabi out of his eyes. There's an interview with him up on Vulture that goes over like a little bit of his career. He's been acting for a really, really long time. And he talks a lot about the depth that he brings to this character who shows up so late into the series, talking about Steve Kornacki as an obvious source of inspiration for the character. But I think, and you highlighted this, Jess, I'm so glad that you did.
I could not help myself. I was like, we have to include this for no other reason besides the words he says.
Yes. So the interviewer asks him, were you sworn to complete and total secrecy about all the plot developments? You must have known far in advance before most of the world that Logan would die because he's not around in this episode. Adam Godley responds by saying, I did. I realized it on set. I put two and two together. I was like, what could have possibly happened to Big Daddy? In the interview, Big Daddy, it's capital B, capital D, and we stand. We love this. What could have possibly happened to Big Daddy? Yeah, I know when I spoke with Justin Kirk, he was also very, like, sort of like, giddily excited about the fact that he was one of like 150, 200 people in the world who knew that Logan had died, and he felt really powerful holding that secret.
I felt like Adam Godley was like, took it the other way and was like, I didn't even tell my partner. I didn't tell anybody because I was so nervous about it.
So that's a really fun interview if you get a chance to check that one out. And then I think one more that's really worth highlighting is an interview with Juliana Canfield, also in Vulture, who plays Jess Jordan, who has that really, really great scene in the hallway. Emily, did you like that moment for Jess trying to like walk up to Cousin Greg and like sort of be like, hey, but maybe just give it a few minutes.
Yeah. I mean, there's like some truth to that. I can't imagine a world in where this didn't actually happen in 2016, where there was someone who was like, this is going to directly affect everything around me. Perhaps we just give it another five, you know, like keep it on ice for a few more minutes. Let's just like really think this through. Maybe someone's going to change their mind. Probably
even
not.
When, like,
it's inevitable,
there's,
but
there's nothing you can do about it. But like in that moment, you're kind of like, what can I do about it?
Just Let me just stall you in the hallway for a little bit longer.
Yeah.
And they're both, Greg and Jess are in similar positions as well. Mm-hmm. Like they're not at the top of the food chain, you know? They are the people that are reporting to others. And Juliana goes through like really such an interesting dive into Jess's psyche and like how she can possibly work for someone like Kendall, being a woman of color, and putting up with him. And she says, like, I think there are times when she thinks, like when he does this like fake woke nonsense, she's like, oh, maybe there's a little hint of something there. Like maybe he actually is a decent guy. Mm-hmm. And you kind of have to trick yourself into thinking
it's called working
that.
For a brilliant narcissist. I've done that before. Doesn't work out so well.
Yeah.
And I do love, she makes a little point to say that at one point, Jesse Armstrong did come up to her. I think it was the shooting of this episode. And he was like, listen, this is like really messed up. I think you can be a little pissed off today. Like, I think you can show that on your face when you're playing Jess. Cause I do think over, if you were like just to watch a compilation of scenes with Jess in them over the course of the series, I do think you'll start to notice that like her facial expressions, they're showing more and more of as time goes on. And like her being like, okay, like a little bit of like the Jim Halpert in Office style,
right,
of you know, not at the camera, but in general, her looking like, I don't know about that.
Yeah, it's sort of this tension between the longer she's on the show and the longer of a period of time she's spending with these people, like the more comfortable she is expressing her truth, while simultaneously the more horrified she probably is by what she is a participant in.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no more blind loyalty the way that there might have been her first however many years of doing this, I think.
Emily, do you think that this is going to go anywhere with Jess Jordan, or was this just a moment, like a grace note?
To see her go all out on Kendall and just be like, look who you are. Look at your children. Look who I am. Look at all the people around you. You preach this and then you do another thing. And, you know, I think like there's been moments where Kendall kind of tries to reckon with it in sort of like very basic ways. But the muscle memory is to veer off and do the bad thing. And he's always going to do the bad thing. He's probably going to choke at the wrong time and screw everything up, because that's kind of what Kendall does. Right.
Yeah.
No matter how much he tries to be the good son and the right person for all of these things.
Ironically, Kieran Culkin, I think, is the one who is more familiar with the idea of the good son.
Yeah. Fair enough. Touche. But, you know, it's really hard when you're rotten at the core. And I kind of think that that's sort of the inconvenient truth here.
Yeah. Jess, is there going to be like a big Jess Jordan moment, or was this just for fun?
So there was a deleted scene where she, it's like her birth or she, yeah, it's her birthday. She's having a party and Kendall calls her and he's just like, you need to get to the office right now. And it's supposed to show like, you know, he doesn't realize, he doesn't consider her to be a person outside of him, her being an assistant to him. Since that was cut, I don't know. It makes me wonder if we're going to see a ton more of her, or if this was like, this was the moment that we're going to get from her. I just think we only have two episodes left and there's still so much left to do. I don't know that we're going to be, I don't want to say wasting time, but spending time on really, really like smaller one note characters like Jess.
And I also think that that speaks to a larger narrative of like, these are people that are puzzle pieces. They're cogs in the machine. We don't give them a lot of space and time to be full fledged characters for a reason, you know, because that's what they are in real life too. No one considers them as fully human.
Not a real person.
Yeah. Fully formed humans, right? Like, oh, you know, you just like show up and do your job. That's what you're supposed to do. You have a life outside of this. We don't care.
Well, we are now the ones who have to show up and do our job. And our job is to rate the Roys. Go to pochorecaps.com/rateroys if you would like to join us in the process of rating each of the main characters as well as the episodes themselves on a scale of 0 to 4. For science, folks. For the people who are only listening to the audio version of this podcast and not watching the video version of the podcast, the great Emily Fox, throughout most of what I was just saying, is just holding up her hands into like a big old goose egg. Just a little
one large zero. Just thank a giant, you very much.
Just a giant egg, ironically enough.
Each
from
small
Emily
pie
Fox.
Slice from that zero equals one Roy character.
All right. Well, let's see if that's ultimately going to be the case. Jess, this was a horrific evening for the cast of Succession. A few bright spots here, but in the context of like what did they accomplish and what they did not accomplish, are we going to be able to overcome our own disgust to award out some points to the people who were more successful than others?
I think you could argue that certain characters had like really stellar episodes in terms of their motivations, what they're trying to do, right? Roman is a really excellent example of this. He pushes and pushes and pushes, and what he wants to have happen does happen. Now, I have to shout out Grace Leader because she has some rules, right? If you send unwanted DPs to people, automatic zero.
Uh-huh.
In my book, if you get a fascist elected as president of the United States, automatic zero.
Yeah.
I hate doing it because I do think like
because I love fascism.
I hate doing it.
It's more like I hate giving people like flat zeros. It just feels like what did we accomplish? You know, like everyone gets a zero. Sure. But at the same point in time, this is one of the episodes I think if I had to go back and look, I've hated all of the characters the most. You know, there's not really a lot of redeeming moments. Like there are certain moments where I'm like, oh, poor Shiv, like she's really going through it. However, even she, the one who is pushing for the Democratic nominee to get elected, is not without much, much fault this episode. Like, she's singularly motivated, as much as you want to look at her and be like, but she's the one who's the Democratic one. She's the one who, like, wants democracy.
She's fighting against fascism up to a point.
Yeah. Exactly. It's all about self-interest with her over top of that. And so it's really hard to, like, get over that when... again, like the trauma and just everything else we've all suffered, it's especially hard to want to give any of these people any points.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of who I would like to give a point to tonight, today. It's an afternoon as we're recording this podcast. So it's not going to be Roman. I can't do it because it's so gross. It's just so gross. He's very successful here, but it is born. It really feels like everything that Roman does in this episode is born out of the. I don't think the pre-grieving worked. Is my feeling about Roman?
Let's say
I don't think that the pre-grieving worked, and I think that everything that's happening is from some measure of grief, just like psychically blasting out. And man, I get it. Like losing someone that you love is impossible. Losing someone that you love where your relationship with them was extraordinarily complicated and potentially really dark, unfathomable. Reacting to that loss by desecrating the nation is also equally impossible and unfathomable. So I can't do it. Even if he's very, very successful here, he's getting the phone call. You know, he's among the very first calls that Mencken makes.
Oh, the president's calling.
Yeah. You know, president calling, hocus pocus.
Can I ask a question about Roman's motivations here?
Sure.
Because obviously he has the pre-existing relationship with Mencken, but if the push is, because it seems like it's twofold in terms of, okay, Mencken will not only block the Mattson deal like we want, but also we have someone in our pocket. The president is in our pocket, right? It, just like the raisin with Logan.
Right.
The president is now in our pocket. Is there any part, because blocking the Mattson deal is Kendall's thing. Roman is now going along with it, but it was Kendall's original idea. Is there part of this, Emily, that is like, this is what Dad would have wanted. I am fulfilling Dad's wishes in absentia of him to try to like push through this. Like, because he says, spoiler alert for the Ken dads, Kendall does not say Dad at all this episode. Roman says Dad quite a lot. This is what Dad would have wanted. This is what Dad would have done. He would have done whatever he wanted to get stuff done. Is there a part of him that is like thinking that this is what Logan wants?
I think there is a part of him acting emotionally as a response to his father both dying and what his father probably would have done in his prime. I definitely think there's a connection there. The problem is that this is just so obtuse and ugly and horrible altogether. And like, yeah, obtuse. It was Logan obtuse. Are you calling me obtuse?
Are you calling me obtuse?
The problem is that Logan was not far off from being this way when he was in his prime as well. So, you know, I mean, there's a motivation, I think, for Roman to kind of follow in his footsteps in a way, especially if he feels specifically responsible for Logan's demise in a bathroom on a private jet, which, like, I think all signs kind of point to. But I also think there's like an F off quality to Roman specifically, where he's just like, the ship's going down, I'm going with it, but in like a way where I'm going to get paid. I've got the power. I'm going to show Dad what I could do, even though he's not here to see it, kind of thing. Like, someone needs to do drastic things, and Kendall's going to be kind of like beta about it and quiet and thoughtful, and Shiv's just too emotional. She's too hysterical.
Right, right.
So I need to be the one that harnesses sort of the Logan Roy power right now and say what I feel.
Yeah, I do think, like, again, you know, Roman's whole history is when Roman gets the opportunities to show us who he is in regards to, like, polite society and human civilization, he always disappoints.
Yeah.
He's just like monstrously disappointed in this episode. But this really is always who he's been. It's just taken to this extraordinary extreme.
Yeah, like, he took a $1 million check and ripped it up in a child's face in the very first episode, guys. Like,
yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
This is classic Roman.
Yeah. Okay, so goose eggs across the board for Roman Roy. How about his CE bro, Kendall, who is ultimately going to go along with it, Mencken, when he says that he's like, Mencken, he's just pushing it through, like he's just been husked out, Jess.
Yeah, the thing is, I have to give Kendall a zero too, because he's the deciding factor. He can go with Shiv, but he doesn't. And what makes it that much worse is, gosh, he's just like Logan in this episode. Him saying, oh, I'm doing everything to protect you. Everything I do is for my children. It isn't. It absolutely is not. When your daughter is being shoved on the street because of the color of her skin and you elect a fascist.
Yeah.
Come on.
Some people just can't cut a deal.
It's so awful. It's really hard to watch. And part of me is also like, gosh, Kendall, you have to stop. You have to see the forest for the tree. Like, he can't. He really can't see the bigger picture here. And it's really disappointing, because Kendall is one of those characters, Josh, that I know a lot of people feel this way. A lot of people, it's their favorite character. It's the one people relate the most to, because he is so like sad, and he goes through a lot of things in his life, right? He really is traumatized and troubled, and a lot of these characters are. And he's the one who you kind of look to be like, but maybe he'll do the right thing this
time.
Yeah,
you might have a slight moral compass here and you still don't use it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he drops the ball here in such a major way. And it's so disappointing.
It's disappointing. So, yeah. I'm disappointed in you, son. But would
he's like the worst thing you can say to someone.
Well, would his father be disappointed in him? And Kelly's in the chat right now saying, Kendall always goes with what he thinks Logan would do and what would make him proud. He takes that you're not a killer comment from dear old dad and becomes ruthless. So as much as Logan is living rent-free in Roman's head, I think very clearly living rent-free in Kendall's head. And he does have that really powerful line in the episode of, I think the poison trickles down, you know, and like there's this quality about Kendall where he's accepting his toxicity as like an inevitability, that it's like an unshakable truth about himself. It's like he read one of Jesse Armstrong's interviews that says people don't change. And he's like, okay, I guess I'm just going to be a piece of shit forever. I used
Call
to be
that-
a piece of shit and I'll continue to be one now. His hair is slicked back, you'll note. So I do clock all that from Kendall. And I think like if Kendall responds to what Shiv did by calling her a piece of dirt, but then looking at Rome and being like, yeah, but we're also not just going to like alter, you know, the state of democracy by calling it. Cause it's obviously, very obviously, it's not just Shiv who's acting emotionally in this room. And Kendall's decision is a really emotional one. And I think like a more centered Kendall Roy can like find a way to like, okay, well, Shiv just dropped the ball by like rolling over and showing me the weak spot. Now I know that she's after me. It won't matter who wins the election because I'll make it work either way. Like if he was really as cunning as he thinks he is, I think that he could make it work either way without having to put his finger on the scale. But he can't help but react emotionally to this because he, much like his other siblings, is an adult child. You know, he's Logan, the late Logan Roy's large adult son, second largest adult son. And he can't help but be that. So yeah, it's going to be zeros for basically everybody. I think not absolutely everybody, but certainly two so far. Emily, you're a zero on Kendall. You're a zero on everyone.
Yeah, pretty much.
Shivy. Emily, you got any strong Shiv takes that you haven't already given? This is a hard one. It's a tough one. She wants to do the right thing up to a point.
She wants to do the right thing. And I did appreciate that at the beginning where she's really being like, hey, we can't be screwing around here. Like, we need real numbers. We need real facts. We need to be checking everything. This fire that's happening. Like, we can't call things that we don't have actual information on. But then you just see the layers get peeled off, right? And she's weakening her stance and kind of like backing down a little bit more. Obviously, her back and forth with Tom is not great. And that feels really rooted in just like deep, devious, evil, you know, spewing hate, et cetera, et cetera. And then, yeah, it just folds. It's like a, you know, a house of cards that falls in on itself. And, you know, we're suddenly all in Mankenville. So like, it's not great.
When you call it Mankenville, it sounds like some sort of like
Storyland kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, this is sorry. Bad. Doesn't sound that bad. It sounds pretty terrible. Jess, thoughts on Shiv.
Shiv is the one. Josh, you know my thoughts on Shiv generally. I tend to give her a bit more grace, a bit more leniency, because I feel like she puts up with a lot.
Yeah,
she does. She has to deal with a lot. And it can't be easy being the like liberal voice in the room full of these monsters, right? Like, it can't be easy to be her. But the problem that I have with giving Shiv any points, and I want to give her one so badly, is there's so much of just self-interest in everything she's doing. Like, it's hard to say this, like, not that I wouldn't be self-interested in that, like, hi, I'm a woman and Mankin as president is very scary to me and my life in general, right? Like, there
and
is
your
a
new
bit of
child potentially. Yeah.
Yeah. There is a bit of selfishness in that. But I think she drops the ball too many times this episode. And it ends up being like, it's her mistake that ends up causing Kendall to make the decision he makes. Now, was his decision a bit like childish and immature? Of course. Yes. But she really is handling this like very sloppily, and that's what gets her caught. And on top of that, I think I wish I could say that I think Shiv telling Tom on this night at this moment about the pregnancy isn't manipulative, but it very much is. It's easy to see that it is. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I also gave her a zero, which does kill me because she's the only one in the room saying that this is bad. We can't do this. You know what? If I could give some, you know who I would give points to? If I could give points to someone that wasn't on this board here, give them to good old Darwin. Darwin deserves a point for that wasabi in the eyes. No one else here deserves points.
Yeah. Can anyone stand in for Darwin here? Okay. So zero for Shiv. I have nothing new to add to what you both just brilliantly said. Let's go to Tom. Tom Wom, big fat goose egg from me. Get some sleep, Tommy boy. Tall guy in a little coat over here. It's not working great for Tom, who is so concerned about his digestive system. Can relate. The spaghetti and olive oil. I don't know why that killed me, but I thought that was hilarious. Just when he's like, no bodega sushi, spaghetti, olive oil, whatever else he said is just very, very funny.
American
to me.
Water or something?
Yeah.
Like that?
Yeah. mineral water. Yeah. Whatever it was. There's definitely still so many moments in this episode where like people are just slaying me, even outside of Wasabi Gate. But they're also slaying me for the wrong reasons. And Tom is such a coward. He's just such a coward. It's not my call. It's not my – bro, it's your call. It's totally your call. But you're just trying to hang on to your job and just sucking kneecaps towards anybody who you think is going to be standing in the power seat at the end of this war. And as a result, you're like – wishy-washiness is going to be the thing that you're, you know, hoisted by your own petard, Tom Wamsgame. So Tom will also get a zero for me. I cannot do anything else for Tom. Jess, do you see any other paths for Tom other than a Zippo?
No, he ultimately, he pretends he's not the guy to make the call, but he is, and he's going to be the one held responsible. And of course, it doesn't really even need to be said, but none of these scores are reflective of like the performances. Said, yeah. So it is. The performance is absolutely outstanding. There are times where I was laughing so hard. Like even the very beginning, I don't think anything that has been talked about enough is Tom and the whole shoes situation about how he's like, have you seen my feet? I have great arches. You know, he's not willing to wear sneakers because he wants to look good. And then he asked Darwin about adult diapers. So like there are really great moments in these episodes for these characters to shine. But Tom, poor decision making all around. He needs sleep. He needs pasta with olive oil. He needs to chill out and not do drugs with Greg behind whiteboards. Tom gets a zero.
Yeah, Kelly mentions that he had to go and get a new monitor, the touch screen. He had no time to make a call.
Touch screen!
Yeah.
I did love that moment very, very much where they're like, Tom, what's going on? He's like, oh my God, I'm crying.
Yeah. Anything further to add to Tom, Miss Emily?
No, I think you guys nailed it, both of you.
How about Greg? Take us to Gregtown.
Gregtown.
You know, if we're giving everybody eggs, it feels only appropriate that Greg would receive one as well, but maybe not. I don't know. How do you feel about Cousin Greg this week?
I don't know. He swims with the rest of these fishes. He's just going upstream and trying to do what he can to get what he wants out of the deal. You know what I mean? Like he doesn't sort of exercise any sort of autonomy in being like, perhaps we wait another minute. Not that he has any influence whatsoever. But I do think that it might make me feel better about Greg if I heard him be like, don't love the way that this country's going. But I think like instead he's kind of doing the nod and, you know, agree sort of move that we've been watching him do this entire season where he's like,
he kind of feels like electrified in the moment. I feel like I actually think that he kind of relishes in these like final minutes before he goes and tells the people like he's the keeper of the move.
He's power hungry too in his own way. And I think he feeds off of this energy and it's very, very funny to watch, even though it's terrible circumstances. Generally.
Okay, so an egg for Greg. I'll also give him an egg. Jess, anything further to add to Cousin Greg?
Yeah, I'm definitely giving him zero. The one other thing I will say is like he is really, as much as he's despicable in this episode, he's really well positioned at this point, being that Mattson really likes him now. And he is the one with the, like, he's the one with the fine wine that he can smash in Shiv's face, which he ultimately does. So he really is playing both sides right now and in a really, really pivotal spot. The quad squad may now be a trio, a tall man trio. I don't know. Anyway, it's fine. He's getting a zero.
Yeah. I'm ready to give my first point. You're
Connor?
Ready? Yeah. A single point. I'm going to give a single point.
Because he's just trying his best.
I'm giving a single point to Connor Roy. And here's why. No, I shan't. I shan't become that. I shan't.
Alas, Kentucky.
Alas, Kentucky. Alas, vanity. It was this moment that was just unbelievably beautiful.
It was.
And for me, it was like the cherry on top of Connor Roy's whole arc. And then his concession speech, I'm a billionaire. Sorry. You know, it's just like, as Willa watches on in horror, as Connor says, the con heads are coming. This warning, this shot across the bow that Connor Roy, his rise shall not be stopped by tonight. And those two jackrabbits, the cowards who he shall not name, his running mates who abandoned him. Hilarious. Connor killed me. And while everyone else acted so horrifically and Connor does not get fully absolved, I need some relief here. Connor shall carry the point for me. He shall become that. He shall
become.
So he's
become like a slight pressure release in the entire episode. I agree with that. I might give him like a half point.
Okay, a half
for the shant. For the shant.
No, I shan't. I shan't become that. Because he knows history is watching. History is being made, and so he has to say something super quotable. It's going down. He wants the record to reflect accurately what he says.
He very much at least knows that the cameras are on him.
Yeah, he knows the cameras are on him, and his entire life he has been obsessed with Napoleon. And so who is he in a moment of historic defeat? Because for him, this is historic defeat. You know, he has to be a historical figure.
Oh, he's so pathetic.
It's so great.
Yeah, I gave Connor a full-on zero because he is trying to help the fascist get elected. And so even with his shant and alas, I cannot give him, if I can't give Shiv a one, certainly I'm not giving Connor a one this episode.
When I heard you say I'm giving him a big ol', I thought you said you were giving him a four, and I was like, whoa. No.
I shan't come back.
Alas.
Do you like how I said shant earlier? Yeah. Like I was British.
I shan't come back. There's no Jerry. There's no Marsha. Jess, Will is asking in the chat, how many points for Big Daddy do you want to give out?
10 Big Daddy, 10. Like, even if we wanted to say, like, oh, again, his presence is felt throughout the rest of the season. Very true. Very much felt in both Kendall and Roman this episode. I still voted him not applicable because I still don't think there isn't anything that he has said that was like, oh, we have to get Mencken elected, right? It was just Mencken was the one who was willing to play ball. He's the one who kissed the can of Coke for him. So I don't think it's really applicable to give Logan any points. Yep. I'm not giving Big Daddy any points.
I think that's fine. okay, so those are the Roys rated this week. Connor Roy, represent. Okay, so no F-offs from Logan Roy. He does not appear in this episode because he's still deceased. Kendall does not say dad for... Is this the first time ever? Is this the first episode of Succession in which Kendall Roy does not say the word dad?
Yeah. And there were only seven dads total, which is very low for a general like episode average of the number of times dad is said.
Yeah.
Seven is very low.
In the blanks dead category, who died? Democracy.
That's what I put. R.I.P.
my soul a little bit.
Yeah, that too.
Darwin's eyes. I can't stop.
Where's Jerry Orbach when you need him?
Oh yeah, that would have worked out.
Eye replacement stat. Yeah.
The moment that Darwin says, "I can't," it's on my fingers. It's on my fingers. The way he says fingers is weird and wonderful. Daddy's favorite. I don't know. You would think it's Roman. Roman certainly thinks that he's channeling his father right now. But Shiv says even Logan wouldn't have done this. And I don't know that she's wrong, actually.
I can see him being like, Romulus!
He wouldn't go on the floor.
Maybe now, but that would be out of like his like end of life senility. It wouldn't be because of like, you know, Logan in his prime wouldn't be going down there probably.
The only reason I think it's Roman is because Logan does respect people who play the game and are killers, right? And if we're going by those metrics, I think Roman is the one who best kind of represents that. If you want to look at Kendall, because Kendall's a good argument for the killer mentality, I think he wobbles a bit much for Logan's liking, right? Because Kendall is the one who's like, I think it's kind of nice, you know, different people all blend in together in America. And Logan would have zero respect for that. So
what about Mencken? Mencken was his pick. He backed Mencken. He wanted Mencken. He, you know, he anointed with a Coke and then he was all in on Mencken.
I feel like
Mencken might be daddy's favorite tonight.
Yeah.
Anyway, we can figure it out another time.
Definitely not Connor. Matter.
It's not Connor. Well, son, you tried. In the battle of Greg versus Tom, what do we think, Emily? Who had the better election night?
I think Greg won.
Yeah.
Sorry, Tom.
I agree. It's currently now, what, Greg 17, Tom 16,
Jeff? Greg is now 18 to Tom's 16. Wow.
Okay.
Now that we've locked that in.
So Tom has to win the next two episodes in order to tie cousin
Greg
long term. That is the best he can hope for. Otherwise, cousin Greg could win this battle next week. He could clinch it.
Unreal.
Keep an eye out. Okay. let's rate the episode. Maybe controversial. I'm giving this a full four. A full four out of four. I can't remember the last time an episode of TV made me feel like this. Like, you know, it didn't make me feel good. It made me feel actively bad. Yeah. By design. And so it was just, I think, really immaculately constructed. It like struck a nerve. I think a lot of people hate this episode. I will not besmirch anybody who is like, this is my least favorite episode of Succession. I certainly would not call this one of my favorite episodes of Succession. But I think as far as what it was aiming for within the narrative and also the conversation that I think this episode is trying to engender, I think that they did exactly what they set out to do, not the least of which is reminding us of who these people are, like who have we been watching all along. And I think here with just a couple episodes left to go, it's really important to remember what we've been watching. So I feel like it is a full four worthy episode. Jess, I think you're a little lower.
I am a little lower. I can respect that this episode is a really wonderful example of what this show is about, while also feeling like it's a little too soon for me to want to like watch it a bunch. And I like, because these are my personal ratings that had to be reflected in the score. I gave it a 3.5. Again, all Succession is good Succession. It's a really, really great episode. Not only of Succession, but of television. And yet it is so hard to watch. And I do tend to prefer the episodes of Succession that make me sympathize and empathize with the characters a bit more than this one did. So I did give it a 3.5, which is still a really good score, just not as high as I usually am, especially on this season, which has really good scores.
Emily yeah. Fox, give us a rating.
I think I give it a 4 out of 4 too.
Emily.
I definitely do not enjoy watching television that makes me uncomfortable, but I'm willing to give this a pass.
You are your father's daughter.
I know. He couldn't watch Mrs. Doubtfire. That's how nervous he got. He doesn't like people being incognito.
He hates incognito. Yeah.
Yeah. Or someone getting ripped off, or like someone being, you know, like a liar.
Yeah. He would hate Succession.
Yeah. He would literally watch probably 5 minutes of Succession.
And then he'd put the remote down and be like, I'm not watching that.
He'd be like, these are idiots.
Yes.
Everyone's a jerk. And
the only thing that I could think of that made me more uncomfortable than this episode of Succession off the top of my head is Uncut Gems.
Nathan For You.
Ooh, I mean, honestly, both of those are good examples.
I've never seen Nathan For You just because I think that would also make me very uncomfortable.
Indeed.
Or the
I'm just going to write down, Jess has not yet watched Nathan For
Next
You.
Podcast. I would do an entire rewatch of Nathan For You and podcast about it. No problem. Call me up, guys.
Something was born here today.
Yeah. But no, I think this is a great reminder. And every 4 years, it's easy to forget / probably not anymore of like how backward elections can be in this country. And this is a nice sort of like pin in it of like, hey, this is how this works sometimes. And it's not a good feeling. And as much as it is uncomfortable to talk about and you want to forget it, if we forget things, then they happen again. So I like being reminded, even if it's done in a dramatic way with characters that aren't real, they kind of do exist in real life. And they should probably be mindful. Yeah, they do exist. He does exist.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to remember that and to be mindful of it and to think about who we put on pedestals and why we think some people are great, even though they're billionaires, kind of jerks. So in that regard, 4 stars.
4 stars. 4-star review. That's going to do it for us here as we close out coverage of America Decides. But just around the corner is Church and State, the penultimate episode of Succession. Only 2 more weeks of Succession still to go. We're going to be live on Sunday night talking about the episode. We're going to have the deep dive, the verses. Rob's going to weigh in. We will be back next week on the wrap up, live on YouTube as well. So make sure you're subscribed there, posterrecaps.com/YouTube. And you can watch the VOD if you're not able to join us live for these podcasts. And make sure you're subscribed broadly to the Succession podcast feed. posterrecaps.com/succession is the RSS link. You can also just search Succession Poster Recaps wherever you get your podcasts. You could also just subscribe to a bunch of stuff. We got a lot going on Post Show Recaps. If you go to posterrecaps.com/ subscribe, you'll get to take a gander. You'll be able to take a look. You'll be able to just gaze upon our works and despair.
So much goose mentioning.
Postshowrecaps.com/subscribe to see what we are up to. We would love to invite you along beyond Succession as the show is beginning to wrap up. You want to stick around with PSR? Well, go and see what we've got. We've got plenty of things that are going to be happening even when Succession is gone. And of course, if you want the commercial-free versions of the Succession podcast, patreon.com/postshowrecaps is the way to do that. Every single Succession podcast here for this final season has been made ad-free for patrons of every level. So if you want to support the podcast directly, if you are able to do that, certainly we greatly appreciate it. And we are giving you some commercial-free podcasts in exchange, as well as at the higher levels. There's the Discord where you can chat with us, get to know us, talk to us about Succession and so many other things. So give it a look, patreon.com/postshowrecaps. Emily Fox, thank you so much. I talk to you every day, but not everybody gets to hear from you every day. So it was really lovely for people to hear from you, I think.
Thank you both so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, we appreciate it too. She's at Emily, wherever you can find her. I'm a big fan. Jess.
I was definitely just the third wheel for like a full 3 seconds there.
Well, listen.
Hey, Will, so nice to see you.
Jess's partner, Will, is in the chat. Will says, love the wrap up.
Yeah.
Okay, so Will's here. So it's a double date now.
There we
it
go.
It is.
You can find me at the Jess Sterling. I'm, of course, always talking Succession and Yellow Jackets until they're both up here and I just cry myself to sleep every day.
Yeah.
But it's okay.
But there's a certain contingent of Post Show Recaps listeners who are going to be very happy because it means that community building will be coming back online.
That's true. It's almost back, and I really have missed it, so I'm really excited.
I have too. I'm really excited. Yeah, maybe people who listen to the Succession podcast don't know that Jess and I podcast about Community. We're doing a rewatch, and we're up to the final season of that. And so the final season of our Community coverage is beginning in June. We've already started dating it. It's happening, and that's going to be really sad to close out because that was like the start of something.
It was.
So yeah, so the Community podcast is going to be coming back in June. If you want to get more from Jess and myself, that is at least one way to do it. So I'm at Rand Howard wherever you can find me. Apparently also you can find me at Rand Howard on Blue Sky now.
What's that?
I have no idea how to use it, but I am on it. I haven't said anything. Do you tweet on Blue Sky? What is the, I think you post? Anyway, I'm there. And I think I'm following one person and followed by two. So if you'd like to be Excellent. Three or four, you can check me out on Blue Sky, which I call Blue Ski, on Round and Howard there. So anyway, that is the podcast this time around. Church and State coming up on Sunday night. Until then, F-O!